Good evening, this is Dr. Dan Guerra's Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Today is 26 April 2024. This is going to be lecture number 12 in our immune cell biochemistry series. So last lecture, I did a little brief introduction of my approach of the epistemology of research science. And I hope that most of you listened to it and understood the purpose is not simply to impose philosophy on research science discussion, although there's nothing wrong with that. That's not what I'm doing. I'm trying to teach how the tools of the epistemological approach to understanding natural phenomena, that is how we gain knowledge, should be component of how we review research papers, which is what we're doing in authentic biochemistry right now. But more importantly, maybe just equally importantly, because both reading the research literature in depth and contributing to the research literature in depth are both significantly important for research scientists. So if you read the literature well and you can interpret it well and understand how hypothetical deductions are made, understand how experiments are designed, and follow through with the logic and the dialectical propositions that are being generated when you're reading the introduction of a paper, and particularly the materials and methods, because that's where the experimental design will be revealed. And then, of course, examining how the data is presented to you, how the evidence is distilled from the data, and then how discussion relates the evidence to the corpus of understanding, which was in the introduction, which was read through by the experimental design to come up with a new induction. And if you keep in mind how the mind functions at the level of interpreting nature by putting the knowledge base into the natural environment, along with the experimental design and the enhancement of the sensoria, so that we use chromatography and electrophoresis and PCR and all the various spectroscopy, all the various types of tools in the modern biochemistry molecular genetics laboratory. All those are as extensions of our sensoria. And then when you're reading the paper, determine whether or not you think those techniques that are being used and that instrumentation being used is the best to answer the questions that are being posed in the manuscript you're reading. And to be able to do that effectively and well in real time, you know, while you're reading the paper, you have to get a good handle on epistemology and metaphysics. So how knowledge is generated, what knowledge means, and the metaphysics, which is the overall reality of the phenomena that is being taken apart and then reassembled. So the analysis and the synthesis, right? All right, enough of the discussion from last lecture. Let's get back into biochemistry, which is what I'm paid to do. Although the lectures are free right now, right? Free now, but maybe later, you never know. Okay. Let's go back to just a general discussion to get us back, inured back into these concepts. Cells from the innate immune system, like macrophages, neutrophils, eosinophils, mast cells, NK cells, dendritic cells, my favorite immune cells, are considered the first cellular line of defense. Now, you know there are a lot of other defense mechanisms, such as the integument, the skin, right? Circulating antibodies, another one. The eicosanoids are another one. Anyways, the mode of action of these cells is rapid, Remember how these cells are able to penetrate into, for example, vascular beds, because they don't function at the level of adhesion, that they're able to move through layers of cells and into organs in a very rapid way so that they don't disrupt the system and they're not impeded by it, right? So it happens fast. Neutrophils are the cells that are probably the most rapid functioning in the innate immune response, as you know, but they're kind of limited in the repertoire of immune mechanisms, but we don't need to talk about that right now. Of course, the adaptive immune system, primarily we talk about the T lymphocytes, of course, and the B lymphocytes. They are not only involved in targeting the specificity of the stress response, say an invasion by a potential or infection by a potential pathogen, but also generating memory cells. And we talked a little bit about that recently in these lectures, and we'll talk a lot more about memory production in particularly T cells in some other lecture series, because I like doing these memory cells. It explains a lot about chronic and autoimmune diseases if you know more about these memory cells. Remember the TRMs we covered just briefly, what, three lectures ago? I'm sure you recall them because it's recent in your memory. So there has to be a coordination amongst the innate immune cells and the acquired immune cells. We are aware of this. And we've been talking a lot about the T cell synapse relative to the antigen presenting and using the major histocompatibility complex protein on the surface of the APC cells to present peptide fragments as antigens to turn on the T cell receptor, right? And we spent some time dissecting the T cell receptor mediated response at the level of protein locomotion and membrane reorganization. We're going to get back into that before we finish this series. So wanted to keep that in your mind. Now, last time we were doing biochemistry lecture, which was 2 days ago, we were talking a lot about lipids, particularly the sphingolipids. And then when we got into the discussion of molecular species of all the different galactosyl sphingolipids, recall that, as they relate to the immune response in the T cell and in the innate cells interacting with the T cell, and a little bit about B cells as well. And then we started talking about omega-3 fatty acids. And so I want to get into omega-3 fatty acid mediated responses and macrophages. Then we're going to eventually move into T cells, sensu stricto. So a paper was done, a huge research project, looking at how docosahexaenoic acid, that's the 22-6-carbon, six carbons with double bonds. The last carbon with a double bond is three away from the methyl terminus. That's why it's an omega-3 fatty acid, right? And remember, it's generated from alpha-linolenic acid through eicosapentaenoic acid, but after chain elongation beyond 22 to 24, and then a chain reduction, so that last double bond could be put in. Remember that? Now, just want to put all that in your mind. So some almost 600 different transcripts that were tuned up in an LPS-stimulated human primary monocyte-derived macrophage line. Now, what they did is they stimulated with LPS, polysaccharide, but those MDMs, those monocyte-derived macrophages, had been pre-treated with DHA. Now, of that series that we just went through, those different cell lines, 25% of the transcripts upregulated by LPS were attenuated by DHA pre-treatment. And the downregulation of the LPS-induced increase in cytokine gene expression by DHA, and in fact also in other studies by EPA, had already been examined in multiple macrophage cell lines, such as the RAW macrophages. And remember those THP1-derived macrophages. Remember, THP1s are the human leukemia monocytic cell lines used extensively to study monocyte macrophage functions, right? So they're very common. All right. So the addition of DHA to bone marrow-derived macrophages. Remember, those are the BMDMs. Again, after LPS stimulation. Now here it's after LPS stimulation, right? Didn't alter transcripts of TNF-alpha, but did reduce transcript levels of the pro, remember the procreative convertase, interleukin-1 beta, with the most effective downregulation of the LPS-induced transcription of interleukin-6, which is a very potent pro-inflammatory cytokine, TNF-alpha, interleukin-1 beta, and MCP-1 genes in the THP-1-derived macrophages. This was after LPS stimulation with the DHA, then subsequent. Now, for eicosapentaenoic acid, that was a unique formula. But during LPS stimulation for DHA, you had that differential effect. So EPA had an effect on many of those pro-inflammatory cytokines post-stimulation, not pre-stimulation, but DHA did not. Okay. Now, when you look at the studies that are published in the literature, they typically do a pre-incubation. But as it turns out, there seems to be a co-effector response in the macrophages with EPA and DHA when they work together. And this happens in RIW macrophages and also in THP1 derived. So pre-incubation of that raw macrophages, RIWs, with DHA, like the previous experiment, also prevented the increase in the transcripts of MCP1, interleukin-1 alpha, again interleukin-1 beta, and IL-6. When the inflammation was caused by a combination of LPS with saturated fatty acid, palmitic acid. Remember that? Remember how palmitic acid can induce inflammatory responses? We've talked about that many times, I think, biochemistry. Now, what does that suggest? It doesn't prove, it doesn't even correlate that, it just suggests. See how, thinking about how knowledge works, these words are very important. Well, it suggests that omega-3 fatty acids might counteract the pro-inflammatory effects caused by certain saturated fatty acids. It doesn't mean that there is even a correlation. It just means that could be used as fodder for hypothetical reduction. See? Now, the other thing to consider is not only DHA and EPA affect by decreasing in general gene expression of pro-inflammatory cytokines in macrophages, all done in cell culture, that is in vitro, but other derivatives from alpha-linolenic acid have also been examined, such as docosapentaenoic acid. Okay? Now, let's get more detail here. When there are investigations of secreted cytokines and chemokines, all of the effect of omega-3 fatty acids on the chemokine cytokine expression level in macrophages seem to show a decrease in their production. So that, in general, the literature is telling us something, that there are anti-inflammatory properties of EPA and DHA in macrophages, and they are not exclusive to LPS induction, because I just told you, fatty acid induction also works. And you know, LPS is working through totally different, for example, toll-like receptors than something like a palmitic acid. Palmitic acid is going to have a membrane effect. Keep that in mind, not just a protein effect. Not, you know, free palmitic acid might be esterified immediately to coenzyme A. So palmitic-CoA is going to be a very active metabolite. But palmitic acid that is not esterified as a thioester could be made as an oxygen ester to preformed lipids in the membrane because of fatty acyl exchange after phospholipase activity. That's going to tremendously rearrange membrane fluidity, and maybe some of those functions of palmitic acid working that way, not through specific reception-mediated responses. You see, so that's a really important thing to put this whole thing together, right? Because it seems like EPA and DHA, at least, are working against perhaps that more general fatty acid-induced response, particularly saturated fatty acid palmitate, whereas LPS is directly going to be triggering, of course, like toll-like receptor, right? Yes. So THP1 macrophages incubated with oxy-LDL. Now, what is oxy-LDL mimicking in this cell culture system? Foam cells, right? Because it's going to generate potential for foam cells. Because, you know, oxy-LDL gets into macrophages. And when oxy-LDL gets into macrophages, foam cells can be generated. And those foam cells then can penetrate endothelial arterial wall, right? Thus generating what? An atheroma, right? So that's why they're looking at this. So what happens when you get THP1 cells derived macrophages treated with oxy-LDL? You get a secretion of interleukin 6 and TNF alpha. You know, the treated cells are higher than the control. And that increase can be rescued by incubation with omega-3 fatty acids. So DHA and EPA will diminish significantly cytokine secretion in the RAW macrophages that were treated also with, wait for this, Pseudomonas aeruginosa, or stimulated with palmitic acid, and or with combination LPS stimulation. So this tells us more, right? You have a bacterial induction, you have a foam cell type induction with the oxy-LDL, and then you have LPS, right? Overall, what does it say? That anti-inflammatory effects of DHA seem to be more potent. Now, we didn't get into all the details there, but at the beginning of this lecture, I did tell you that DHA had a very robust effect, and EPA did not. DHA could work either pre-incubating or post-incubating. EPA could not function post-incubating. That was one of the take-home messages. I went rather quickly through that, okay? So, and the other thing that came up with these studies, these are multiple studies. They're all in one paper that I give you the in the show notes, of course, the citation, the reference. The only cytokine secretion was increased by the treatment of omega-3 fatty acids, very interestingly, was IL-10. IL-10 is anti-inflammatory. So you see. So the omega-3 fatty acids, EPA and DHA, are able to suppress directly. Now you'll remember this from the inflammasome. Mosaic. They're able to suppress inflammasome-mediated inflammation with a potency that was as good as the classical caspase-1 inhibition. And the caspase-1 inhibitor was that YVAD, if you recall. So the inhibition of the NLRP3 inflammasome, remember, by EPA and DHA, was demonstrated in macrophages as well as in primary human and mouse macrophages, okay? Primary. And for a wide range of inflammasome-mediated stimulation, okay? However, pretreatment of macrophages with EPA or DHA doesn't inhibit all of the different forms of that inflammasome platform activation. So DHA, EPA, and even alpha-linolenic acid, which is a precursor to those, of course, decrease interleukin-1 beta secretion in BMDMs stimulated with LPS, and also, you know, they throw everything at it, anthrax lethal toxin, which is a specific activator of NLRP1 inflammasome, but not in BMDMs stimulated with LPS and infected with S-timfumarium. So that tells us what? There is a distinction between the types of inflammasomes that can be either controlled or at least nested back one level order of magnitude by the omega-3 fatty acids, but that the inflammasomes themselves, the character of the specific types, while they can be controlled in certain inductions, like with LPS, they are not once you use a bacterial induction, right? And this was seen also by treatment with LPS and polydeoxyadenosine deoxythymine. Now, what does that do? These are all moving through different TLRs, if you remember. That's going to turn on the NLRC4, which are also known as the AIM2 inflammasomes, right? Okay. So you've got NLRC4 and AIM2. And those are going to be differentially affected by LPS with or without polydeoxy-A, deoxy-T. So what is formulating is that omega-3 fatty acids mediate an inhibition absolutely at the NLRP3 inflammasome, but not at the level of the expression of the NLRP3 gene. Okay. And that backs us into the fact that omega-3 fatty acid inhibition of the inflammasome that carries NLRP3 once transcribed, translated, and put into the platform inflammasome. Remember, that acquires PPAR gamma and that G protein coupled receptor 120 and the GRP40 signaling. Okay? So that means downstream and upstream mediated responses controlled by omega-3 fatty acids have a limit effect on certain inflammasome-mediated responses in macrophages, depending on what the stimulus was. Either bacterial stimulation, using nucleotides, which are going to be mimicking what? DNA in the cytoplasm, right? So that's going to be, again, something like an invading pathogen, or perhaps a disruption of the nucleus. And then what? Nucleosomal degradation and DNA activity, right? That happens often in cancer cells, right? Particularly cancer cells that have rapid replication of the genome, right? So you can start to see all the intimate details getting further and further with these omega-3 fatty acid protective roles, okay? So that means all we're doing, and this is a 2019 paper, so it's what, 5 years ago, all we're doing here is laying the groundwork for a great amount of new research. And there has been, in the details of all the specified inductions, bacterial, DNA, RNA, and of course the palmitic acid or LPS. And we'll go into all those details. I'm just laying the groundwork here. Okay. All right. So, T cells. You know, T cells are thymus-derived lymphocytes, and they're recognizing antigens presented by APCs through the TCR. I want to rediscuss this because we were just talking about what? Macrophages, right? So we've left that topic behind. We're back in T cells. Let me check my time. Yeah, I've got to be careful though. T cells, of course, quite heterogeneous. You've got Th1, Th2, Th17, Th33. Of course, you got Tregs, right? And they're all going to have slightly different, the T cell receptors in those cells are going to have different associated induction phase-mediated responses. By phase, I mean the phase of the antigen presentation. And that will involve a reassociation of the membrane glycoproteins, right? And there are nested sets of specificity. We went through some of this a couple of lectures ago, maybe five lectures ago, okay? So you also have CD4 positive and CD8 positive T cells. Remember that? And that, of course, right away is going to tell you there's a cell surface expression of the protein CD4 or CD8. Remember CD4 we already talked about. It's intralocution with the T cell receptor and that PGSL protein. Remember that? I do. So if you want to go back and listen to those lectures, go ahead. But we're going to pull this all forward. Don't worry. So again, you have the T helper cells. You also have cytotoxic T lymphocytes. We discussed these many times in the past. So again, to remind you, CD4 positive, also known as TH cells, they're also T effector cells. You get TH1, TH2, TH17, TH33, and also TH22s. Okay. And they're all going to produce and secrete unique cytokines upon stimulation of the T cell receptor. So TH1 secrete interferon gamma, typically. TH2 secrete interleukin 4. TH17, of course, interleukin 17, both 17A and 17F isoforms. And interleukin 21. And interleukin 22. And then in the TH22 cells, secrete primarily interleukin 22. And TH33 cells will release interleukin 1 beta and IL-33. Okay. Also, keep in mind the Tregs. We know what they do. They suppress the activation of many other immune cells. Again, TH1 cells, right? TH17 cells, and also of the CD8 positive T cell line, and B cells and macrophages and dendritic cells. And this occurs, basically the CD8 cells are being regulatory in the periphery for self-tolerance against the innate immune cells. So there's the Treg cells are playing that immunosuppressive role in the periphery and also in the major lymphatic organs, right? And of course, everywhere else. So pro-inflammatory T cells are the cytotoxic CD8 positive T lymphocytes and the CD4 positive TH1 and TH17. Those are the classic ones, right? Okay. So, and you know, again, CD4 positive T cells upon stimulation of interleukin 6 and TGF beta will then activate STAT3, remember the JAK-STAT pathway, and in some of those cell lines, the TH cell lines, T helper cell lines, you're also going to get, after STAT3, you're going to get the enhancement of transcription of the transcription factor, ROR gamma T. Those are going to be the ROR gamma T cells. Remember all that from previous discussions? Wait, let me check my time here. So we're just now getting back into T cells. Yeah, I think I'm going to stop here because I've only got about a minute or so left. Okay, so next lecture, I promise, we're going to move away from the innate immune cells and we're going to get directly into just T cell mediated activity. And we're going to go back and look again at omega-3 fatty acids in T cell receptor activation. I promise that lecture probably going to be on Sunday. Because tomorrow I'm not sure I'm going to have time to be able to do a lecture. So Dr. Dan Guerra at Authentic Biochemistry Podcast Studios in the Northwest United States saying, have a pleasant Friday evening and with your family and bye for now.